Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder to comment on six capitals in the Ukraine conflict, the European War, the Global North War, the World War underway now, with questions here midwinter about the springtime and continuing this conflict into a second calendar year. Professor, I read from a new article at Foreign Affairs by two prominent Russian nationals, Garry Kasparov, the chess superstar and liberal democracy booster, and Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who heretofore was a billionaire energy magnate until he was arrested and persecuted by Vladimir Putin and Dmitry Medvedev's regimes, jailed for 7 or 8 years, released. They are writing together, dated within these last hours. The regime of Russia President Vladimir Putin is living on borrowed time, they write. The tide of history is turning, and everything from Ukraine's advances on the battlefield to the West's enduring unity and resolve in the face of Putin's aggression points to 2023 being a decisive year. If the West holds firm, Putin's regime will likely collapse in the near future. They go on to make a very good case for why there are Russians waiting to reawaken Russian ambition for prosperity and democracy and transparency. The Russian Action Committee is their vehicle. There are elaborate statements of how they will transform Russian governance back to a liberal democracy where it was headed in the 1990s. I bring this up because we begin with the Moscow point of view. The war, it looks to be a stalemate along the Donbass. How does the Kremlin regard the war in Ukraine, the continuing failure of its military to be successful, and now prominent voices in English, in the West, saying, once Putin's done, we're going to remake everything and prosecute all the war criminals. Good evening to you, Professor H.J. Mackinder.
Good evening.
Of International Relations. Take it away.
Well, good evening, sir. What you've quoted demonstrates the difference between the Moscow point of view, as it were, and Putin's point of view. In other words, the voices that you are quoting from Foreign Affairs probably speak for a very large number of educated Russians who are aware, first of all, that the only way that Putin can win this war is by some extraordinary escalation, a great, great increase in violence, but that in turn is unlikely to be sustainable in Russia. So what we can expect is that first 2 points. The first point I'd like to make is that everybody is becoming aware this week that, like almost every war in history, this war is going to have a bloody conclusion, a big fight at the end. And that's not something that Putin had in mind, and it's not something that we had in mind. And number two is that if you're in the position, say, of Mr. Putin, there's a difference between your personal interest and your personal power and the interests of Russia in the war. And what most politicians do is sacrifice the national interest in order to promote their own interests. If Putin tries to do that, then I suspect he's going to elicit opposition. So we can expect a period of real something between instability and complete disorder in Russia. Mr. Putin, well, I think that he and his group are determined to win, but they don't have a clear pathway to this. Let me just make a few quick observations. They are gradually eating away at Western Donbass border. And the reason is very simple, that they have overwhelming artillery dominance, but they're having problems with supplying shells for that artillery and all the rest. But there's no way that the Ukrainians can outgun them at the moment. Now, the Russians, even so, are talking about a military buildup up to 1.5 million men, stepping up military production. There's a freight train that we're tracking that's coming up from North Korea, I guess loaded with state-of-the-art Korean artillery shells and so forth. And Russia, by all reports, is becoming an increasingly poor country. So it's not even clear that Mr. Putin has the option of recreating something like the Soviet military, which is the Russians had no need for it. So once they got rid of the communists, they got rid of that military. And then Putin is trying to do things with a military that was never designed for the sorts of purposes that the Soviets had. So that means we're looking for other ways to win. And Putin and others say they want to start killing Americans. Because it's the well-known fact that if Americans start taking casualties, then political dissatisfaction grows in Washington and we become less resolute and so forth. I don't think that's entirely fair, but certainly in the case of Vietnam, the war was lost in Washington, not in Vietnam, although it was a bloody mess. But one possibility that I think is quite real is that as resupplies become more and more of a problem, particularly if more lethal weapons are supplied to Ukraine, the Russians may say, look, this is out of bounds. We're going to start blocking the railroads and access through Poland. We're going to not allow aircraft, all sorts of things. It's incredibly risky. But Putin clearly is somebody who doesn't assess risks or national interests very well. Another possibility is to crack NATO, and I see some fissures, and we'll come to that. They've been making nuclear threats again. I think this has to be taken seriously. But the best route for Russia is to get the Americans to tell the Ukrainians to make a deal, and then simply to cut off weapons and say, well, it was we've made our point that we don't think it's a good idea to invade other countries, but we're not actually going to try to drive the invader out. Now, what the article you quoted from shows is that people are starting to understand that losing Putin may not be a complete disaster. There are a lot of people who, in the Russia watching community, who were very enamored of Putin. There's a new bestseller in France, kind of trash novel called The Wizard of the Kremlin, and it's very, very pro-Putin. And the comments are that the French have got a kind of fascination with Russia, and they don't like the Americans much. So there is a portrayal of Putin really as being almost heroic in his own way. Now, I think that what we have to understand and what these Hodorkovsky and Kasparov are letting us know is that there is a huge upside in Russia. We saw that until Yeltsin retired owing to his appalling alcoholism. But Yeltsin was basically doing the right things, and Gorbachev was trying to do the right things. And if this war could be ended and Putin could somehow disappear, there's no reason that Russia could not move back to where she was, say, in 2010, and be a democratic constitutional country, although with a lot of changes. But this is a real possibility.
Do you measure that the U.S. State Department, and we'll speak of D.C. soon enough, but the U.S. State Department has enough Russian weight in it to imagine a different Russia than an authoritarian Russia? The reason I ask, Professor, is I routinely am reminded that those decision makers in Washington right now, from the youngest, say, in his or her 40s, until the senior senators, they're all cold warriors. They were raised as cold warriors. And seeing Russia as the enemy is routine. Are there enough people to imagine a Russia before it was a threat?
Well, I have a very low opinion of our expertise on Russia. I think that there is a subterranean current that seeks somehow to co-opt and win over not just Russia, but actually Putin. I think this goes back to the Obama administration, at least. And I think that there are not many people who have a real gut understanding of Russia. The Cold Warriors don't really either. We see that the American president who did the most damage to Russian reform efforts, who did the most to undermine Gorbachev and Yeltsin, was George Bush Sr. He decided that it was too risky to support democratic change in Russia. And as a result, he put a lot of sort of unreconstructed Cold Warriors in. Now, we could not have saved Russia or changed it, but it's nonetheless interesting to me that someone who is allegedly well-educated, like Bush, should have been so completely ignorant. And I've heard fascinating stories from some of his ambassadors about George Bush Sr., was unable to imagine that communism would ever end. So I guess I'm not, if I needed an expert opinion about Russia, I would not go to the U.S. State Department.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, Six Capitals. We're headed to Kyiv. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.